edition of the Hagmann Report. It is Monday, December 9th, 2024. I'm Doug Hagmann, and thank you so much for your belief and trust in this broadcast. A lot of news to get into, obviously. On the domestic side, we have a man charged in my home state of Pennsylvania, Altoona, awaiting extradition to New York for the murder of the CEO of United Healthcare, the suspect's name, Luigi Mangione. Interesting background on that. I'm going to wait to really do a dive on that. Only because, again, there are certain things. Look, oftentimes a cigar is just a cigar. I get that. But then there's the things that sometimes, you know, when you look at things, events, especially in a homicide, and especially in a homicide like this, you've got to just kind of weigh the facts and kind of assess how the information came about, who provided this information, and the, you know, the motive, the means, a lot of things. So I just want to kind of wait. I'm assembling some facts that I have verified. Okay. So I see some facts out there that are not verified. But I'm verifying the facts. I'll probably get into this tomorrow, but that's on the domestic side. On the international side, of course, we have a real whopping mess in Syria, and why you should pay attention to what's going on in Syria, and really where, how did this even start? Where did this come from? It seems like out of the blue, right? Not really. Not really. If you've been paying attention, and as I've always said, I've said World War III, meaning the kinetic World War III, is going to start in Syria. How many people out there, especially in chat, and thank you for joining the chat, appreciate everyone there. How many people remember me saying that years ago? I've said that. Before I get into it, folks, hey, Christmas is coming. And I've got a little device here that I plug in to my wall outlet. It's right here, actually. It's only this big. And this is an extra one I took from the studio. I have three in my house, two in my studio, and three in my house, two in the office, and three in the studio. This is from don'twastepower.com. You know, recent reports, folks, reveal that U.S. electricity bills have set, my goodness, a 10-year record high this past summer. And they're not stopping. Look, the power companies have to obviously make a profit. A lot of the profit goes into the shareholders' pockets. We get that. Domestic energy policy has a big thing to do with it. But the bottom line, how can I save money? I use that little device. I lower my energy bills with that awesome little device. Absolutely love the cost savings it gives me. Thanks to it, I can help cut down my electricity costs, beat the power companies, and keep more money in my pocket every single month. Please visit, folks, don'twastepower.com. That's don'twastepower.com. Or just click on the link in the description box below to get the nation's leading way to lower energy bills up to 66% off. Free express shipping plus several other bonuses with every order completely for free. Hey, Christmas is coming. It's a good gift. Great stocking stuffer. Great gift. It helps people save money. And even if you have no one to buy for, or you choose to buy for no one, buy it for yourself. That's don'twastepower.com. All right. I want to get right into a couple of things. One thing I want to get into, and of course, we also had domestically the Daniel Penny being found not guilty of even the lesser charge of negligent homicide, which I think is fabulous. And it's interesting to me because this, when I look at this verdict, and man, I've been in so many courtrooms and, you know, different trials and such. I look at this verdict. This is a mandate. This, I can't imagine, George or Alex Soros or any of the Soros family members or the Clintons, or I can't imagine any of them being really happy about this verdict, but it's the right thing to do. The charges should have never been brought against Daniel Penny. And I've got some videos on that. But before I do, my objective here is to inform and even educate whenever possible, as much as possible, because you know, many people out there, they see what's happening in Syria, and many younger people, especially the younger people, don't realize the history that we people my age have witnessed in the Middle East. And that's one thing I really want to get into. First of all, before I get way deep into that, because it's important, because this goes back to Carter. Actually, it goes back further, but I've got to pick a spot to start. So it goes back to Carter. It goes back to the Carter Doctrine. It goes back to the hostage crisis. It goes back to the Shah. Remember the Shah of Iran? Remember the February 1979, not November, but February 1979 revolution in Iran. It goes back to that as well. But it even goes, and this will indict, and I'm telling you right now, it will indict the government, not just of the U.S., but it will indict the government of Israel as well. You know, look, you can be spiritual, religious, and you don't have to be anti-Semitic to criticize the government, the globalists within Israel, any more than you're anti-American if you criticize a globalist or the globalist agenda in America. But let's be honest here, okay? We have to understand who benefits from all of this and who's in charge. Here's a spoiler alert before I go deep into this. Right now, we exchanged Assad for the leader of ISIS, essentially. So you go from bad guy, bad Assad, to bad guy, good, the leader of ISIS, who just 7 years ago, the U.S. embassy in Syria had put up a $10 million wanted bounty on this man's head. That was 7 years ago, 2017, May 15th, to be exact, when that was posted on Twitter. I'm just saying. And now we're backing him in Syria. Do you see anything wrong with this, folks? I'm sure you will. But let's kind of start easy, if you will. Let's go to cut six in the show notes. Folks, by the way, HagmanPI.com, and I probably should have said a few things before I started. Number one, the first shipments of books, I had to look for something special, and I found it, and I'm taking care of it. So the first shipment of signed books are going out tomorrow, and I was going to do that last week, but again, there was something I wanted to do, and I did it, so I held them back. So they're going out tomorrow. Folks, if you go to the link in the program description for a signed copy of In the Dark of Night, I'm going to tell you, I'll personalize it however you'd like. Yeah, be careful with that, though. That makes a great Christmas gift as well. Or if you're interested in events based on a true story stemming from a murder investigation, it's a great book. And again, I wrote the book In the Dark of Night. you know, sign it and personalize it with an inscription if you'd like. You just have to be very specific in the instructions. But the link will be in the program description guide at HagmanPI.com as well as Rumble. Okay. And I think perhaps on the audio, but HagmanPI.com is the place to go. But let's go easy. This is cut six in the show notes. Again, find it at HagmanPI.com. Glenn Beck and Rand Paul, they're talking about Syria. It's a two minute and 11 second video. This will give you kind of like an overview of the current situation, but it does not do justice to really how we got here. Naming names, and I'm talking like Jimmy Carter, like Bill Clinton, Barack Hussein Obama, George W. Bush, and some other people. I've got a fantastic video clip for you as well. It just blew my mind, the history contained in that one video clip that I have. It's a little longer, but it gives you the depth that is necessary to understand what's going on today. But first, cut six, Eric the Tech. By the way, Eric the Tech, how are you? Doing well? You're there. I can't see Eric the Tech.
Let me say that again. I'm here.
You're there. It's really difficult. Believe me, folks, it's difficult to get used to when the studio and the op center are not in the same place. I don't know. I guess Eric the Tech got sick of my smiling face, right? All right. At fire at will, cut six.
Let me switch topics to Syria. The president made it very clear that this is not our issue. I went back this weekend and looked at a story from 2016 where the CIA was supporting one side and the Pentagon was supporting the other side in Syria, and they were fighting each other. And now the president, the current president, whoever that is, bombed Syria over the weekend. And I just have this bad feeling that the military industrial complex wants to have a war somewhere. And Donald Trump is coming out and saying it isn't any of our business. I know where you stand on war. What do you see coming?
I agree completely with Donald Trump on this. And the people who took over, the rebels who won, their new name is a new name given to an old group called al-Nusra, which were associated with al-Qaeda. So they were Islamist, meaning that they were for a radical, fundamental sort of nature of Islam that doesn't treat women well, doesn't treat Christians well, et cetera, a very primitive form of Islam. Well, they've been fighting there for a long time. There's also another group called ISIS that is actually somewhat the same, fundamental Islamist. And then there are also other groups there as well. There have been the Russians there. There have been Iranian proxies there. There have been Assad there. Caught in the mix are hundreds of thousands of Christians who have always had sanctuary since the time of Christ, frankly, and are at risk. And so we have 900 soldiers. 900 soldiers isn't enough to organize a parade. Yeah. I mean, 900 soldiers is not who you go to war with. You want to go to war in Syria, you'd put 5, 10, 100,000 troops in. You don't put 900 troops in there. They become targets, not a deterrent. Right. They're not deterring anything. But if some of them are killed, and I hope this doesn't happen, then all of a sudden maybe we are drug into the middle of a civil war where there are no good people on either side of it.
Okay. That kind of is a pretty vanilla explanation, right? Wouldn't you agree? I think so. But let's go to something else. And this is cut eight. It's only 14 seconds, but what's going on with the Christians in Syria? Christians are about 10% of the population in Syria. You had sort of a détente between the Assad regime and the Christian population. Now, I know some people will say, well, that's not really the case. Christians were being persecuted, not to the extent that they were. I mean, that has any persecution is bad, but it's kind of right up through last week, I'll say. It really wasn't as prevalent as it was. But again, any persecution is bad. But now what do we have? When you've got the head of ISIS coming in, as a matter of fact, Eric the Tech, if you don't mind, before we go into this 14-second video, if you want to put up the page one, this is from the U.S. Embassy. They posted this on, at the time, Twitter, on May 15th, 2017. This is the Twitter photo that was put up of the man who's running Syria right now, ostensibly for the government, Mohammed al-Jolani. Okay, that's the guy who is sitting right now where Assad was sitting. Stop this terrorist. And there's a $10 million bounty on this man's head. ISIS, Al-Qaeda morphing into ISIS, ISIL, ISIS. Okay. That's who we propped up. That's who's in the driver's seat right now. Folks, this was anything but an organic uprising in Syria. This was a very calculated and extremely World War III type of operation. If you go back to World War II and study like the events that went, that led up to the U.S.'s involvement in World War II, of course, with Pearl Harbor, we're in that period right now of the events leading up to a third world war. This is the neocon globalists in the U.S. This is the Likud government in Israel. And again, I am not anti-Semitic. I'm not anti-Jewish. I'm anti-globalist. But you have to blame the proper people. And Israel is part of this. The U.S. is part of this. Are they the good guys? Well, let me ask you, putting a man like that in the driver's seat or allowing that to happen, is that a good thing? Well, let's check out cut six. This is a roundup of Christians. This reportedly, and everything I could tell, this was just over this weekend. This is not stock footage, but this is how they're treating Christians. This is cut six. I don't know if it has any audio, but here it is. Or wait. So there we have it. Okay. Does that surprise anyone? No. I don't think it does. It shouldn't surprise you. It shouldn't surprise me. It shouldn't surprise anyone watching this. The thing that surprises me is the glee that I see the left and the neocons. And folks, I don't know about you in the chat, but I'm really having trouble right now differentiating between those on the left and the neocons traditionally associated with the right. I'm having a lot of trouble differentiating between the two. The John Boltons of the world. But then there's something else going on here too. There's in the backdrop of what we're seeing right now, we had the Arab Spring. Please stay with me on this because this is so important for everyone to understand the composition of the Middle East and why things are happening. This does connect with Ukraine. This connects it goes back to Benghazi, it goes back to Lebanon, or it goes back to Libya. It goes back to the Mubarak in Egypt. They've been planning this for years, decades, actually, this takeover. if we are to understand what is to come from a political, geopolitical, and war type strategy, we have to understand this, and we have to understand the correct information. And I've got to say, look, I am an America first, America. I guess I'm a populist, right? I believe that we should stay out of foreign entanglements. I don't believe we should shed our blood over oil. We shouldn't go to war over oil. We have enough here to take care of ourselves, or whatever other treasures. Okay, no. But yet, the neocons and the left, they're far too quick to send our boys and now young ladies over into a killing field, whether it's Ukraine or whether it's Syria. We have 900 soldiers right now that they admit to in Syria. We have a lot more, actually, who are mercenaries, who are acting under the color of different groups and such, making a lot of money. But look, our hands are dirty on this. Israel's hands are way dirty on this. Bad dirty. I'm talking about 9/11 kind of dirty as well. No, I'm not. Look, again, this is not meant to be anti-Semitic. I am pro-Jewish population. The Jews of the Bible, absolutely. And I know people get all hung up on this and say, oh, you know, you can't talk about Israel because you're anti-Semitic. No, look. It's just like we can't talk about our own government when there are thieves, robbers, deceivers, murderers, whatever, in our own government. I'm anti that. I'm anti that in Israel. I'm anti that in America. I'm anti that everywhere. So, I guess leading up to the important backdrop, let's go to video cut 9. This is Mike Benz. Now, Mike Benz does a great job in capturing the current evolution, or the current state, as well as the recent evolution of events of Syria. Mike Benz, I have a lot of respect for him. You can follow him on various social media. And I think he's got a Substack as well. But ISIS is in full control of Syria. Now, I'm just asking. And Eric the Tech, if you can, I mean, you can weigh in on this too. And folks in the chat, if earlier this year, if I would have said ISIS, Assad is going to flee, ISIS is going to take over Syria, and they're going to do that with the help of the U.S. and Israel. Would you think I like fell out of a coconut tree or something? I mean, would you believe that? Or would that be a stretch, do you think? Just asking. And by the way, folks in the chat, look, man, be nice, okay, in the chat. That's all I ask. I just saw some comment there. Folks, look, if we have to babysit the chat, I'll just shut the friggin' thing down. In fact, I don't even have to do what I'm doing right now. Play cut 9.
Mike, I want to pivot, since we only got you for a few more minutes, to what is going on in Syria, because you always sort of have the real, actual, non-USAID spin of what's going on there. I sent the studio a tweet that I hope we have, but if not, I don't know if the studio's going to be able to pull it up, so if you can sort of just give us your thoughts on what's going on there.
It's one for the history books. So basically, ISIS is now fully in control of Syria, completing the wish list items of the Obama administration. This is basically the first W that the Biden administration has gotten in 4 years of foreign policy disasters. It was essentially L after L after L. And then finally, the last month that Biden's in office, he gets one victory on the world stage, and that is installing ISIS as the head of Syria. So basically, we have been pumping up these al-Qaeda groups and these al-Qaeda spinoff groups as a way to topple Bashar al-Assad in Syria. There's been this lightning blitzkrieg over the past week where to many people this has come as a sort of bolt out of nowhere, because Syria had, backstopped by Russia and Iran, had rebuffed the largest CIA operation in declassified history, something called Operation Timber Sycamore, which was, excluding Ukraine, in my opinion, but it is formally the most expensive, most expansive CIA regime change operation ever undertaken in U.S. history. And it failed spectacularly, actually, several years ago. There's been an effective stalemate, but suddenly ISIS made a huge resurgence and just conquered the entire country. Now, they've done so through this sort of ISIS rebrand called the HTS. And what I was asking your producers to put on screen is something that I think will live in Twitter history, in X history. It should be framed, frankly, in the Louvre or some museum. This is a tweet from the U.S. Embassy in Syria. So this is the State Department in Syria in May 2017. And it says, "We remain committed to bringing leading al-Qaeda figures in HTS to justice." And there's a big image saying, "Stop this terrorist, Mohammed al-Jalani." Up to a $10 million reward that the State Department was offering for this man's head. The State Department is now backing this man to rule Syria. He is the rebel leader of HTS. He is the military leader who is going to play a very senior role now in Syria's new government. And just 7 years ago, under Trump, there was a $10 million bounty on his head because of his role as an ISIS terrorist. Now, this tweet is still live. This is why I wanted to make sure we got this live on this segment, because I am fairly confident that the U.S. Embassy is going to take this tweet down because of what a humiliation it is for exposing the U.S. use of ISIS fighters as a cynical cannon fodder faction in order to topple foreign governments. But the other thing that I find very strange here is the timing of this. Trump campaigned on ending ISIS in 2016 and has declared along the campaign trail that he will essentially do a counter jihad on jihadi forces. Well, we've got a lot of those in reserve because they're backed, funded, diplomatically supported, and militarily armed and trained by the United States of America, our CIA, our U.S. aid camps, our diplomatic back channels. And so I suspect that they fear Trump will wipe out ISIS. And so they've essentially done this last minute Hail Mary to use all these assets before Trump is handed the reins and sees them for what they are and shuts them down. But it's too late now because they are now they're the government of Syria now.
They're the government of Syria now. They're the government of Syria now. He mentioned Operation Timber Sycamore. I don't know how many people are familiar with this. You can look it up. I would not rely for anything, but especially that. I would not rely on Wikipedia for anything, especially that. But the overview of Operation Timber Sycamore, it began sometime around 2012, and it was a CIA and it was a CIA DOD operation along with the UK and some of the Arab nations. And what this was a weapons and supply program that really was headed by the CIA. Okay. The UK was involved in it. Saudi intelligence was involved in it, and it supplied money, weapons, personnel at times, training to anybody who would oppose Bashar al-Assad. And again, this operation, the CIA has different departments. This was run by the Special Activities Division. This was Obama's baby, okay? Don't forget the name here, Barack Hussein Obama. This man, as far as I am concerned, was backing any Arab terrorists that he could possibly find. He traded thousands or by his order, along with the UK, along. And I have to say this too. You had some Mossad infused into that. We have to actually identify all the bad players. The UK, the US, some Mossad, contrary to what one would think. Like, really, you know, you're training your enemy? Okay. But the result of this.
Come on, man. Come on, people.
Barack, I'll tell you what. Can I invoke Biden right now? Let me take you out behind the gym, right? Seriously. Because the consequences in the form of lost. The lives lost from this is hard to believe. And this was not, this operation did not become known until President Trump got into office or was about to get into office. The rumblings of Operation Timber Sycamore began, the foundation began to crack in 2016. But it really was in 2017, the first quarter of 2017, calendar quarter, that is, when it really became known. But there was a flood of U.S. weapons. I'm talking about fully automatic, weapons, mortars, grenades, missiles, that made their way into the Middle East black market. And this was ineffective because they fell into the wrong hands, and expensive because it was on our dime. All of these were our weapons, kind of like Afghanistan. And folks, please bear with me because this is so important. If you really want to know about World War III, we're living it right now. It's not coming. It's here. And it would not surprise me if I woke up in the morning, went out in my robe and slippers and got my morning newspaper. Oh, we don't do that anymore? Okay. And read that Damascus was a ruinous heap, pursuant to biblical prophecy. I'm telling you, that's where we're at right now. We're about to see this take place. And you can thank people like David Petraeus, who this was his brainchild, but it wasn't his alone. You had the warmongers surrounding Obama, and even the neocons that were not necessarily involved at that time, including John Bolton. He was involved. Bolton was involved, but to a limited extent. But this was nothing more than a CIA-run operation for weapons, for training, and for personnel. And this was to destabilize the al-Assad regime. And the program, the program itself, the principal backers, initially, U.S., the U.K., then came Saudi Arabia along, and at the time of the U.S., we were working as well with Israeli intelligence, okay? And again, this is not to be critical of the Jews whatsoever, okay? I'm telling you about the political part, and that's the last time I don't make any apologies. I want to make that clarification. Because I am not anti-Semitic, I am not anti-Jewish, I'm any more than I'm anti-American. All right, so.
God bless you.
Thank you, Barry. Hey, let me talk to Larry Sinclair. Is he there? Or is his mouth full at the moment?
Probably full.
Eric the Tech, God love you, man. Or as Biden would say, God love you. By the way, I'm not going to get into where is Joe Biden right now? Where is Joe Biden? The cathedral Notre Dame, okay, in France.
Well, he's probably been in the ground for a while.
It wouldn't surprise me a bit. Fertilizing the plants, right? Man, I'm telling you. All right. So you kind of get the idea that it started back in 2012 to destabilize the Assad regime. But wait a second. Did it really start then? All right. As I was doing my research, and by the way, I've got a couple of great books. The book that is going to be mentioned in this next segment, you've got to get that book. Okay. I have no financial stake in any of this, but this one book about the Middle East and about the real history of the Middle East gives you all of the gritty details. And the author spent some time with Candace Owen. Okay. Before I get to that again, I want to lead up to that. Let's go to cut 10. Syria replaced with ISIS 2.0 or 3.0. This is Colonel West, who I love this guy. I've talked to him at length when I was on with Lori Roth back in 2010, in that time period. And we had a lot of great conversations off air. And the amount of information he had about the Middle East, oh, just absolutely tremendous. I do need to get a hold of him, have him come on, because he's just a tremendous fountain of knowledge. But this is cut 10, and this is Colonel Alan B. West. It only runs for 1:05, but something to think about in addition to everything else we're talking about. Here it is.
Former al-Qaeda leader, who is kind of the de facto man in charge of Syria right now. Christians are being rounded up, according to numerous clips on social media. Israel is occupying those Syrian bases now. I don't think that sits very well for very long. And the United States is bombing ISIS targets inside of the country. Very unstable, to say the least, and a dangerous situation, isn't it?
Yes, it is a very dangerous situation. Again, that's why I talk about this leader coming in with his associations to Islamic terrorist organizations, and who is his main benefactor. It probably is Turkey. You know that Erdogan is not a very good person. Erdogan is definitely anti-Israel in his stance. So when we look at what could happen there, what would fill that void there, and what type of forces organization would take over, you're right. You end up losing the Sunni Alawite Ba'ath Party type of leadership you had in Syria, but then it gets replaced with something that is ISIS 2.0, ISIS 3.0, you what have you. We don't want a terrorist sanctuary to be established there in Syria, and we have to be very precarious about that possibility.
That, again, was a very light assessment. It didn't go deep into what's really going on, but it gives you additional clarification. Yes, Christians are now currently being persecuted under this ISIS regime. Compliments of the U.S., compliments of really our allies, in quotation marks, in the Middle East. And yes... yes, with Israel. Israel had a big part in this as well. There are roughly 5 goals. As I went through everything, there are 5 goals that I identified with respect to Syria. And this also involved, I mean, you could, the same 5 goals you can apply to Ukraine as well. Number one, money for the military-industrial complex. You cannot believe, well, you probably could, the money that is being put into the pockets of the weapons manufacturers and BlackRock and State Street Capital and other organizations of that ilk. You've got this fight over resources. Resources.
I love that word.
What's that?
Ilk.
Ilk. Of the ilk. Better than elk, but okay. Should I use it more often?
Ilky.
Ilky. Got some ilky. I just, no, I won't say what I was going to say. Eric the Tech, thank you. I can print it out for you and send it to you. We'll have a word a day. How's that? But so money, one, two, resources, three, depopulation. This is a depopulation move as well. And it's a, it also, when I say depopulation, it's like the third objective. I will also, number four would be to kill Christians, which is part of the depopulation, a subset of that. But it also goes to number five, establish a new world order. And that new world order has a lot to do with implementing the Islamic caliphate. You haven't heard that in a while, have you? It's all the secular new world order people. But there is this Islamic overlay that is extremely important for the establishment of a one world government. Now, I don't believe a one world government would be led by anything Islamic. I do, however, believe that a one world government, which is the objective here, it would be led by components, including the Islamic element. All right. Now, the next thing, the next piece, and I don't know, folks, I know that a lot of people watch this show, also tune into Alex Jones. General Michael Flynn gave a very, very great, laid out some great information. This is only about 9-10 minutes, whatever it might be. And this is, I have to go back. Okay, this is cut 7. On InfoWars, General Flynn broke down how the World War III dominoes could start to fall because everything is connected. And I want to put this here as opposed to at the end, because there are some references when you look at the next video after this, you can tie some pieces together and see how long this one world government, this new world order has been in play. Okay. And how we, and what we can get out of the final video about this topic, what we can get out of that is a way to stop or to put the monkey in the wrench. Okay. Or the fly in the ointment. I watched Die Hard this weekend a couple of times, so kicking off my Christmas movie marathon. And yes, I'm aware. I'm a believer that Eric the Tech. Do you believe Die Hard is a Christmas movie or not? There's a big, you know, always been a big.
I think it's meant to be played around Christmas. Why not? There you
go. Yeah, Nakatomi Plaza.
Home Alone. But
no, it's not alone. But anyway, I'm sorry for digressing, but I'll tell you something. General Flynn gives a lot of good points here. Please, if you already watch this again, but watch it from the angle, and maybe a different angle. Watch it from your recollection. If you were alive during the Carter years, if you were alive during Reagan, the fall of the Soviet Union, Clinton, Bush, all right, look at it from a historical perspective as he talks. And I'm glad Alex let General Flynn just dump the information, because it was a fabulous, I thought it was one of the better presentations by Mike Flynn. Again, you don't have to like the man, but the facts that he provided are 100%. And how this all connects to the Third World War in which we find ourselves today, and what could happen, what probably will happen in the near, intermediate, and long term. And by long term, I'm not talking centuries. I'm talking at most a decade. But here it is. This is, and you can watch the entire clip, but this is cut 7 in the show notes at HagmanPI.com. Go ahead.
I'm not in court in Houston right now at the investigation by the judge of their fake auction. I'm here, but we could be shut down today. If the judge decides to let it go through, the U.S. trustee for the Justice Department has said shut us down tonight.
Eric the Tech,
I'll be over at the Alex Jones Network.
Yeah, you gotta go back to the start. Oh, I that was my mistake. That should be ended, not start. Sorry about that.
In Syria is directly connected to the things happening across Eastern Europe and certainly Russia. And the one thing that I will remind people of is because there's not a lot of conversations about China on the backside of all this, Alex, and to your great audience is the CCP. China is the big influencer here. China is the big threat here. We're in World War III. I don't want anybody to think that there's this regional conflict in Europe that can be handled locally or this regional conflict in the Middle East that can be handled by Israel. And I will tell you that I do believe that Russia and the likes of Putin has been very calm because with some of the direct threats that he has been presented with, I do believe, and we cannot keep pressing him because at some point in time, as a sovereign nation state leader with the largest component of nuclear weapons in the world, on the planet, he has got to protect his own citizens and the safety and security of his own country. So you pull the tiger's tail too much, you're eventually going to feel the bite.
Eric the Tech, can you pause that for a second? I just want to throw this in there. Does anyone find it interesting that as a junior senator from Illinois, Barack Hussein Obama was selected to be on the Lugar Commission, and their goal or their objective was to oversee the nuclear disarmament of the U.S.? Okay, and also, you also have to think about things you haven't thought about in the past when it comes to Russia. Uranium One with Hillary Clinton. Rosatom with Clinton, as well as even the Bidens, the Biden family. The disposition of nuclear arms and nuclear waste. I'm telling you, this is all connected. So let your mind kind of expand as you watch this. Go ahead and continue.
Globally, these events unravel and unfold in some cases, whether it's a coup in Romania. We actually had one in the Republic of Korea. We have this incredible rapid movement of the Islamists in Syria to topple Assad, longstanding leader of Syria. So all of these things that are happening, the 100,000 foot level is really this new Middle East that is taking shape. I would say that we need to really start paying attention to what's happening inside of Iran. I have heard from some friends over in Europe about some potential leadership changes that might occur there, but these people have to get on the ground first, whether they operate from the Central Asian republics or they operate from Turkey. Who knows? You know, these are the kinds of things that are going to start to take effect and the consequences of the things that we're facing. Now, I will tell you that everything that is happening in Syria is directly connected to the things happening across Eastern Europe and certainly Russia. And the one thing that I will remind people of is because there's not a lot of conversations about China on the backside of all this, Alex, and to your great audience is the CCP. China is the big influencer here. China is the big threat here. China is the nation state that is fomenting much of this. And obviously they're able to do it from a position of, you know, of staying out of it, you know, from a media perspective, right? Nobody's talking about China. While we are so distracted with what's going on in the Middle East and what's going on in Eastern Europe, China has been infiltrating into our system for decades But China is taking a huge leap into places like the Caribbean, Cuba, and many of the Caribbean islands. They're embassies that they're building in some of these countries. They have formed an alliance in South America and Central America with certain countries. 80 to 90% of the ports, the largest ports in our hemisphere, the Chinese either own or they control. And they have an alliance with different countries down there. Of course, Brazil, Bolivia, and others. And one of the areas that I'm always concerned about, and I always highlight to your audience, is the Panama Canal, because 70% of our trade, as well as our military capabilities, have to use probably the most strategic waterway for the United States of America in the world, bar none. So I don't want us to be overly distracted by what's going on. And that's exactly what the Biden, Harris, Obama cabal is attempting to do, is to drive us toward a war that has consequences that we cannot imagine just yet. And never mind the exchange of nuclear capable weapon systems between Ukraine and Russia. Never mind the fall of Assad. I want people to understand that we have elements of Iran involved in still of all this. China, and another country that hasn't gotten a lot of play is North Korea. North Korea, and there are things that are happening that were happening in Syria that the North Koreans were involved in. So there's so much at stake right now. And when we talk about, we're in World War III. I don't want anybody to think that there's this regional conflict in Europe that can be handled locally, or this regional conflict in the Middle East that can be handled by Israel. CENTCOM, Central Command out of Tampa, just conducted, I think it was 200 strikes, if I got my numbers right, in the last 48 hours inside of Syria. So anybody that thinks we're not at war, and we're talking some of our largest, most capable Air Force platforms.
We're talking B-52s.
Big time capabilities inside of Syria, and the types of targets that they were going after. And so there was an interesting article that I read early this morning, and I think that it's right. And essentially, the question was asked, is who's winning the war in Syria, the Pentagon or the CIA? Because they're fighting each other. It appears they're fighting each other. It's like the CIA is backing, you know, one group, and the Pentagon's in there fighting on behalf of who? The American people, the American government? I mean, a declared war, declared what? I mean, we're not even certain who's in charge in the White House. And this is where, to take it all back to the sort of the strategic view of what's happening, this is where, and I'm sitting at my sort of mobile command post here in Palm Beach right now. This is where I think Donald Trump is going to have to assemble his national security team, kind of a wartime cabinet right now, and make some decisions about who to call. And I know that he's in his trip over to Europe and some of the statements that you just, you know, said that he had made about NATO, and, you know, that he has said, I think everybody needs to be paying very close attention to the kinds of actions that Trump is going to have to take even before he takes over as president of the United States on the 20th of January. We are potentially walking into a trap, right? And I think that Trump understands that. I understand it. I know others on his team understand it. And this trap is one where we stay into this cycle of war that only benefits the military-industrial complex and benefits the intelligence community, security state complex. And it takes the eye off of the ball of what Trump really wants to do from day one, which is start reformation of our government, start holding people accountable, start taking care of America first items on the table, meaning the deportation campaign, the protection of children, the rebuilding the wall that he started during his first term, and really like get the energy community in our country going again, reduce crime, all of those things, none of which can happen on the 20th, all of which could happen in the first few months if we did not have these massive distractions of these wars that we are involved in, these major regional conflicts, which everything that happens in the Middle East is directly tied to these coup operations that are going on in Eastern Europe, Romania, you mentioned, and what's happening in Ukraine and Russia. And I want people to understand that, do not take our eyes off of the Chinese ball, so to speak. And if there's one guy that I know, just listening to him over the last couple of weeks, that has a good grasp on all this, it's Trump. Now, he cannot do this alone. His national security team, every single American, all of us have to weigh in together. And I do believe if we do this and we show strength as an American citizenry, then Donald Trump can do whatever actions to take, whatever actions he needs to take in order to transform the kinds of things that we are going to need to go through here in order to make America great again. I do think that one of the things that Trump needs to also make a statement about is he needs to tell this current administration to back off fomenting unrest in Eastern Europe. That has to happen. That's clear to me that's going on. And it's probably elements inside of the U.S. intelligence community that are doing that. I'm glad to see Trump talk about NATO the way he's talking about them. Basically, they got to foot the bill. They got to get in. They got to get involved. And also, I think the next big conversation that we're going to start to hear about is the UN, because the United Nations also needs to be made to heal here a little bit because of the things that they're fomenting as well. And I will tell you that I do believe that Russia and the likes of Putin has been very calm because with some of the direct threats that he has been presented with, I do believe, and we cannot keep pressing him, because at some point in time, as a sovereign nation state leader with the largest component of nuclear weapons in the world, on the planet, he has got to protect his own citizens and the safety and security of his own country. So you pull the tiger's tail too much, you're eventually going to feel the bite. And that's what I don't want to have happen. I don't want to see happen. And I'm hopeful that Trump and Putin have had some exchange of information. I'm paying attention to what Lavrov, his minister of interior, or is essentially his State Department lead, that Lavrov has said recently. So all of these things matter, Alex, and these are the kinds of consequences that happen when we have a pathetic leadership in the I call it the O'Biden administration, because that at the end of the day, kind of who's in charge? It's not Biden. I think Obama, we've seen him pop out in the last couple of days, you know, with more comments about what lines need to be crossed. I mean, this is outrageous. Outrageous. This is not a peaceful trend.
All right, folks, you get the idea. Now, that goes on for a few more minutes, but I wanted to play the major section. I know a lot of shows will not go into, they won't go over a minute or maybe 2 minutes of a video. And I look if I see information. And folks in the chat, let me know if you think that this long format is not to your liking. I'd like to know, you know, but I want to hear what people have to say. People like him who know what's going on. I want to know what they've got to say. And so there's one other aspect to what's going on. And I want to draw your attention to Romania. Okay. Because we're talking now, obviously, about Syria. There was Assad was overthrown by ISIS, backed by the U.S., the U.K., backed by Israel. Okay, and there were some Middle East players as well as some mercenary groups. But that's really the subject of this part of the show. But we can't talk about Syria without really mentioning Ukraine and Russia, and of course, as General Flynn said, China. But Romania also kind of falls into the conversation. And you might ask, well, how and in what context? Well, in 2024 was the biggest election year in history. I don't know how many people know this. There were major elections in 72 countries impacting or affecting 3.7 billion people. Now, Romania was one of those countries. And it's interesting because a man by the name of Calin Georgescu was elected in a democratic election. Oh, but wait. Georgescu has been compared to President Trump in terms of his beliefs. Now, some of his beliefs, if you believe what is being said, a little bit out there, okay? But, hey, there was a Democratic election, ostensibly. He won. He wasn't, no one thought he would win. It was kind of a 2016 President Trump moment for Romania. The strategic location of Romania, especially with respect to NATO and Ukraine, as well as if you open the world map and see its location and the potential it has with Syria, you can understand why this is important. But Mike Benz had a conversation about what's going on in Romania and kind of brings this into the fold. He was talking with Natalie Winters on the War Room. I thought this was smack dab, absolutely positively relevant. This is cut 12. It's 2 minutes long, but those 2 minutes are pretty important. Mike Benz hit the nail on the head with this one. And also think about our involvement. When I say our, think about the deep state involvement from the U.S., the CIA, as well as, well, really, people talk about the Five Eyes. I now am thinking it's Six Eyes with the Israeli Mossad, but that's something different. But take a look at this about Romania, and then we'll wrap it up on Syria after this. This is cut 12.
Well, what's happening here is NATO fears that if the Russia neutral party, which just won the election in Romania, takes power, that party, which campaigned on ending all support for Ukraine in the war against Russia, that it would massively cripple NATO's ability to carry out a successful campaign on behalf of Ukraine, because Romania is the main weapons transshipment point from all CIA and UK arms that are warehoused in Pakistan. This is there's a major sea bridge, there's a major air bridge that allows U.S. weapons, which are warehoused in Pakistan, to support initially the Mujahideen in the 1970s and then al-Qaeda and now ISIS. Serendipitously, this is happening the same week that ISIS just took effective control over Syria. They're now the sitting government. But those arms initially flow from Pakistan from the south and then obviously through Turkey through the north. But there's this transshipment route from Pakistan to Romania, Romania into Ukraine. And if those weapons caches and munitions are stopped because the sitting government in Romania does not want to be hostile to Russia and therefore shuts off the military aid to Ukraine, there goes Ukraine. And so here they are sitting there essentially with their thumbs up their butts, trying to think of a reason to cancel the elections so that they can continue their war on Russia. And so what they've done here is something that was sort of attempted to be done here in the U.S. in 2016. If folks remember, Norm Eisen and the legal hatchet blob team in 2016 tried to get members of Congress to annul the election results on January 6, 2017, by arguing that Russia had interfered on U.S. social media. Now, they were unsuccessful in that campaign. I think something like only 13 or 16 members of the House of Representatives were on board with that plan. But evidently, they pulled that off in Romania. And my question is who at the State Department, who at USAID, who at the National Endowment for Democracy leaned on the Romanian court to make this happen?
All right. That was Mike Benz talking with Natalie Winters. And I think that's a good question. Who is making the decisions in the strategic importance of Romania and the control over the leadership in Romania? Folks, this is why Romania is important, obviously, to Ukraine, but equally important, well, maybe not equally, but close in importance to Syria as well. So we've got to have, in order to form this global governance system of governance, you've got to have control over all of the Eastern European countries, including and especially Romania, given its role in the route for weapons and personnel and such. So that's why all. And do you find it? Do you find it troubling to see everything happening all at the same time? That's kind of, you know, that's kind of what I'm looking at. Folks, you're listening to the Hagmann Report. It's Monday, December 9th, 2024. Brief break. I'm going to tell you about staywarmnow.com. That's staywarmnow.com. Folks, you can cut down your electric bills as well as stay warm now. Look, we are entering into a time when winter, when the electric bills will be just, I mean, you're going to have the gas bills, the electric bills. You think it was bad during the summer with the cooling bills? It's even worse now. But you can do something about the heat, bringing heat into your area. And I love this device. I really do. I use this new mini space heater, which you can see on your screen. I use it in my home. I use it in my office. And I use it elsewhere. In fact, my wife has one in the bedroom for her comfort. And I'll say this, it works. It's powerful and it's controllable. You can adjust the temperature up and down. And this will not raise your heating bills. This portable mini heater makes nearly any room warm and cozy in no time. It's compact, but strong enough to warm up, as I said, places like my office, the den and bedroom, living room, or wherever else you would like instant warmth. It includes a built-in overheat protection, as well as adjustable heat levels from gentle warm to toasty comfort. So do yourself a favor. Grab one for up to 60% off this holiday season. The only place to get it is staywarmnow.com. Plus, if you order today, you're going to receive a free expedited shipping, 60-day satisfaction guarantee, several other free bonuses. Folks, go to staywarmnow.com. Give the gift of warmth this holiday season. It's it really eliminates the need for in many cases, the costly central heating if you are just living in like one space of the house. It's I should say this, it's a low noise operation, if you will. Very, very quiet. Staywarmnow.com. All right. Thank you, folks, for considering that, and thank you also for your support of this broadcast. So there we have the situation right now as it stands. The timing of all of this to me is very troubling. When you have Ukraine break out when it did, and everything that's taking place, the money that has gone into Ukraine. Hold the thought on the money laundering aspect of it, just the military significance of this, the pressure being put on Russia. Now throw open another front, that being Syria, while also kind of bookmarking Romania, given the fact that Romania, again, is an important staging area. It's strategically important for Russia. So all of this combined, what do we have? We have this absolute mess in the Middle East, the timing of which is laid right on President Trump's lap as he comes into office. Now, but the timing is essentially fortuitous for the globalists, because this was planned again decades ago. I do, and we're going to get in Daniel Penny too as well, and some things that are going on here domestically that are so important. But before I do, folks, Candace Owen has this great, had this great conversation, had this great interview. And I think it was, I don't know, 2 hours long. But what I found absolutely critical to understand was the history leading up to the present. And by present, I'm going to say you know, the last 30 years, okay, the history leading up to, well, the turn of the century, okay? That's what I found most important, because if you don't look at the players, many of whom are still involved back during the Iranian uprising and the Iranian takeover and our role in that, then you're not going to understand the Middle East. You're not going to fully understand Arab Spring and our role in Arab Spring. And the fact that it was not an organic uprising, but a planned strategic uprising backed by the intelligence agencies of the U.S., Israel, of the U.K., and others, okay? So you have to, like, really understand all of this. And again, ask yourself today now, who's making the decisions, the executive decisions that should be made out of the White House? It's not Biden. So who are making the decisions? Is it the Pentagon? You heard Mike Benz talk about the Department of Defense or the Pentagon versus the CIA. There's some opposing roles there. And if you get deep into this, you'll find that there are some opposing objectives and opposing roles.
Come on, roles. Man.
Yeah. Joe, where are you, man? We need proof of life. Well, actually.
Flibbity-jibbity nonsense.
Oh, man. I can't do any better than that. You got hairy legs, right? All right. Let's go to cut 13. This, again, is an extended... It's an extended clip cut from this interview. But please pay attention to the workings from the Carter regime. And also understand and catch the names here, including Rothschild. Catch the names, even back then, or especially back then, and understand who and what we're dealing with today. This lays kind of this is the runway to World War III. This is the runway to where we're at today. Just kind of look at it like that. Look, people thinking that Assad falling and being replaced is a good thing. You might want to check. You might want to rethink that. I'm not saying Assad was a good guy. I'm just saying you might not want to party right now, because there's a lot of bad things that can and I'm sure will happen, including the destruction of Damascus, because we've been leading to that for a long time. Okay, this is cut 13.
And how did America get involved in Syria?
Well, let's go back further, okay? I think everybody in your audience knows about Operation Cyclone in Afghanistan in the 1980s. We've all seen Rambo 3.
Yeah, but right? let's assume we don't. I'm born in 89. I know about Afghanistan now.
Okay.
But let's
go back.
Let's assume everybody knows nothing.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in 1979, there's an Islamist revolution in Iran, and the Shiites take power. Very importantly, it's the Shiite clerics, the mullahs, as they call them, the Ayatollah Khomeini, who took power. Now, they usually leave out the fact that he was living in France in exile at the time, and it was Jimmy Carter's State Department and CIA who said, we know this guy. He's a friend of ours. He helped us overthrow the government back in 1953. We can deal with him. So the Carter government asked the French to put him on the plane and send him back to Iran, where he inherited the revolution against the American sock puppet dictator, the Shah Reza Pahlavi, who was forced to flee. He was dying of cancer anyway, and he was forced to flee. Now, most people, say your father's generation, for example, all they remember is the Iranians saying, great Satan, and burning American flags. But what happened was, and that's the Iranian revolution, but that wasn't until November. The original revolution was in February, and for 10 months, America was still getting along with the new Ayatollah's regime. It wasn't until Jimmy Carter, on advice or request from David Rockefeller, invited the Shah into the United States for cancer treatment, And that sent the signal to the revolutionaries that America was going to try to reinstall him on the throne. Mm. That was when they sacked the embassy and took the hostages. And that's the part everyone remembers now. Mm. But there was 10 months between the revolution and the hostage taking, not to excuse the hostage taking, but just to say this wasn't necessarily an anti-Iranian, anti-American revolution in the first place. Like I say, it was an old friend of America's who was in charge. And very importantly, and this is in the book Treacherous Alliance by Trita Parsi, which I urge you and your entire audience to read. It's one of the most important books about the Middle East you'll ever read. And it's all told from the point of view of the American, Israeli, and Iranian strategists at the highest level. Of course, the poor Iraqis are just stuck in the middle, but we'll get to that. But so the Iranian Revolution happens in 79. Carter is humiliated by the hostage crisis. So he announces the Carter Doctrine in his State of the Union speech in 1980,
okay,
which says America will now treat the Persian Gulf as an American lake. And if any other power threatens it, read the Soviet Union, we will go to war. In other words, even though we just lost Iran and the people in charge are now mad at us and just took our hostages, we're essentially giving them a war guarantee that if the Soviet Union invades Iran, we will stop them because we won't let them take over the Gulf. And then as part of that same doctrine, they started building up bases throughout the Gulf and they gave the green light to Saddam Hussein, who had just seized power.
America is building up now bases.
Right.
So we're talking about the early 80s. We start building bases
all
around.
Still Carter, right? 79, 80, because he lost in 80. Mm-hmm. So this is like his last year in office.
Okay.
So we start building up, and he gives the green light to Saddam Hussein, who had just seized power in a bloody coup in Iraq. He gives him the green light to invade Iran.
Okay.
Now, why does Saddam Hussein...
Now, this is very important, because... Uh-huh. Generation 9/11 here, all we are ever told, Saddam Hussein, oh, he's crazy, he's a dictator, you know, everyone kind of gets that treatment in the end. And I had to remind people that were listening to this podcast, no, this used to be an ally. All That's of these right. people that you're hearing are dictators, Gaddafi, they were allies to the United States.
Before they got backed up.
I just want people to understand, when he mentions the Carter Doctrine, folks, it's important to understand that that was a policy that Jimmy Carter laid out in his State of the Union address, and that was on January 23rd, 1980, that stated that the U.S. would use military force, if necessary, to defend its national interests in the Persian Gulf. And that essentially the Persian Gulf was our... We were to oversee the Persian Gulf. That was kind of like one of our Great Lakes, if you will. And this was in response to the Soviet, Russia now, but the Soviets back then, intervention in Afghanistan in 1979. Operation Timber Sycamore. Okay, notice how these are connecting. But what I really want people to really understand, when if you're out there and you watch, for example, Morning Joe with Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski, it was Mika's father, Zbigniew Brzezinski, who wrote the core section of the Carter Doctrine that stated, and I quote, "Any attempt by any outside force to gain control of the Persian Gulf region will be regarded as an assault on the vital interests of the U.S., and such an assault will be repelled by any means necessary, including military force." That doctrine is still in place. Brzezinski, as a globalist, a key globalist, member of the CFR Trilateral Commission, they're calling the shots right now on this. So pardon the interruption, but I thought it was so important for people to understand that we're playing by the rules that were established back in 1979 and laid out in 1980 by Jimmy Carter. Good old Jimmy Carter. And you thought that he could, that, you know, he was the worst. Well, look at Biden. All right, go ahead and continue that.
Right. So now you're bringing us to Saddam Hussein.
Right.
He gets the green light from America.
Right.
And they're like, do your thing. Like, we actually want you to invade.
Exactly right. So they help him to invade. And they fought essentially a stalemate, a horrible stalemate war all through the 1980s.
Who's fighting?
Saddam Hussein's Iraq versus the Ayatollah Khomeini's Iran.
Okay.
And America was backing Iraq, which was armed with all Soviet weapons, against Iran that was all armed with American weapons.
Wait, say that again. So America is backing...
America had been supporting Iran until the revolution. Okay. So that was why they were flying F-4s and F-14s and fighting with American weapons, where Saddam Hussein's military had been built up by the Soviet Union.
Okay.
But he had just been brought into the American fold.
Okay.
So it's America backing a Soviet army against an American army.
Got it.
In Iran.
Amazing.
Isn't it crazy? So this is just, they're only just beginning to switch sides back and forth in the war now. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, at the same time this is going on, the Soviet Union invades Afghanistan. The Americans, and we know this, I demonstrate this in my previous book and so forth, they increase support for the Mujahideen forces fighting against the Soviet Union in order to provoke them into invading. The thinking was, we just had, Vietnam became shorthand for a terrible thing that you should not have done. So they said, we just gave ourselves a Vietnam. Now let's give the Soviet Union their own Vietnam in Afghanistan by luring them in, bleeding them to bankruptcy, forcing them out the long way and the hard way. Mm. And truly, I don't think anyone could argue, Democrats and Republicans agree, and I think I do too. This was one of the major things that helped to destroy the Soviet Union. It was one of the straws that broke the camel's back of the commie USSR, was this fool's errand in Afghanistan, trying to prop up the communist government there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, very importantly, part of that effort was backing not just the local Afghan Mujahideen, but a whole new group of mercenaries who are called the Arab Afghan Army, or the International Islamist Brigades. This is the Azzam group that became the Bin Laden group. These are the international terrorists. Saudis, Syrians, Libyans, even some Palestinians. Azzam was a Palestinian who'd been living in a refugee camp in Kuwait. Why was he living in a refugee camp? Okay, we'll get back to that. Anyway,
pause that for a second. I just want to weigh in here. You realize, folks, that we abandoned Afghanistan. Biden, when I say we, the Biden regime abandoned Afghanistan. Now, President Trump had a plan for leaving Afghanistan that was not followed. This is one of the issues discussed by Kash Patel in his book, Government Gangsters, how this whole thing kind of played out. This was also discussed in a number of other books. But the bottom line here, think about Afghanistan back in the late 70s, the Mujahideen, how all of that was created. Again, you have to widen your view, in my opinion. You've got to take a look at the entire modern series of events that took place that involved Afghanistan. What's Afghanistan now? Just an ash heap, compliments of the U.S., compliments of Russia. But at the bottom, these globalists, these warmongers, and I'm telling you, all of this is so connected to what we're seeing with Syria today, what we're seeing with Ukraine today. And the lost lives in Afghanistan. That pullout that really was one of the events that really tanked or assisted in tanking the Biden regime was one of the most obscene events in modern history. And the 13 lives that were lost at that airport, absolutely needlessly, but shamefully by Biden. You remember when they brought the bodies back, he was checking his watch. Okay, so, but understand, this is my request. Understand how big this is and the players involved in this and what their objective is. Their objective, aside from creating this new world government, this global governance, is the depopulation. And that depopulation, especially in Syria, when you look at Syria and you look at the geography of Syria, the resources, the energy that would flow through Syria, the deep water ports, for example, held by Russia. They're all in jeopardy now. Now, what does that mean? It means that the depopulation agenda through the sucking away of energy, in this case, very specifically, resources. That's one way to depopulate a country, or the world, actually. All of Europe, to be honest. So understand this in the larger realm of things. I hope this is getting through, because this is so important. Because when things go really bad, you're going to be able to understand how we got here, who's responsible, and maybe with this background of information, you'll be able to tell at least about when things are going to go really bad. And we're almost there right now. But consider the runway that got us here, which is what he's talking about. So go ahead and finish that.
Aries ended up becoming under the control of Osama bin Laden, which merged the Azam group with what was then called the Egyptian Islamic Jihad.
So just to slow it down to people that are listening. So we are arming rebels because we're essentially fighting a proxy war with the Soviet Union. They're in Afghanistan making a terrible mistake. We see it as an opportunity. A lot of this has really just been a proxy war with Russia. We'll get to that later. And this now brings in, so first we're back in Saddam Hussein. We're going to find out later that he's actually a terrible, evil dictator and a terrorist. Now we're back in Osama bin Laden. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. We've got these people, these jihadists. We're giving them money. We're giving them weapons. And we're going, this is good for us. And Hillary Clinton admits this on tape years later. The Mujahideen, we funded all of these rebels, and then we declared them problematic in the future.
Right.
So now we've got Osama bin Laden in the mix. What happens? What happens in Afghanistan?
Right. Okay. And people can reference, there's a movie and a book called Charlie Wilson's War, all about this as well. Rambo 3, I like to mention, because there's some funny anecdotes in that, in the conversation that he Colonel Troutman, Rambo's hero, Rambo's leader, says, "We already had our Vietnam. Now you're going to have yours." Right. Like, that was exactly what they were doing there. Okay. So, and they're supporting, again, not just the Afghans, but this international Islamist group. Okay. So now, it's the end of the 1980s. The Iran-Iraq war comes to a negotiated settlement. The line really hasn't even moved. The war is essentially over as a stalemate. The Afghan war comes to an end. The Soviets withdraw, and it takes the Mujahideen about another 2 years to finish killing off the communists in Kabul. Okay, but now Saddam Hussein has a problem with Kuwait and Saudi and UAE. They're all calling in his war debts from the Iran-Iraq war, but he can't pay them off because oil's trading at about $10 a barrel. He's making no money whatsoever, right. And he's got the Kuwaitis are slant drilling from the shared Rumelia oil field on the Iraq-Kuwait border, and they have quotas on how much you're allowed to produce, same as like West Texas. We own adjacent property on the ground, but we have a shared well beneath. Well, we have a quota how much we're allowed to produce each month and not cheat each other. Otherwise, you get your knees broke. That's West Texas rules. Mm-hmm. Well, the Kuwaitis were cheating. So James Baker, the Secretary of State, told Saddam Hussein, well, go ahead and break their legs. Those are the rules. Mm. See if I care. And everyone can read this in the April Glaspie memo. She was there's the Iraqi version of it that was published in The New York Times. But then thanks to Julian Assange, we have the State Department version of the memo as well, where she says in no uncertain terms that we are slightly concerned about your military movements toward Kuwait. And gee, we really think that we would prefer if you wouldn't do something like that, because we sure don't want to have a war with you, which was at the very best a mixed signal, a flashing yellow light to go ahead and invade. And Glaspie, and people can check me on this, Glaspie later told the New York Times, well, we didn't think he was going to take the whole country. Mm. He was supposed to just take the northern oil fields, break their legs, make them pay the price. But he got carried away and went all the way to the coast.
So we're again signaling, hey, you're our ally. Do what you have to do. Take over the oil fields. Mm-hmm. We're obviously being motivated by just wanting to potentially buy oil from him. I mean, what's the motivation there to keep supporting Saddam?
Well, so yeah, that's part of it, is they, you know, the oil majors in Houston, they get along fine with him. Mm. They don't care who's in charge as long as the oil's pumping. And I describe in the book, my best research on this is, this is not deliberate, but the way it worked was the CIA and Central Command in the region. We're telling the Kuwaitis, you don't have to take this from Saddam Hussein. Tell him to piss off. While at the same time, the State Department was telling Saddam Hussein, you don't have to take that guff from them. Go ahead and break their knees. Meanwhile, at the Defense Department, and I'll give them credit, Deputy Secretary of Defense for Policy, Paul Wolfowitz, was terrified and tried to stop it. And he convinced Secretary of Defense Cheney to convince Bush Sr. to send a letter to Hussein to try to stop him. But the letter wasn't worded strongly enough. So they tried to send another one, but it was too late. The troops were already rolling. So I don't think that they were deliberately tricking Saddam into doing this. It's essentially just the empire is too big right. and has too many different departments and they're not coordinated enough. Mm-hmm. So on one hand, we're telling the Kuwaitis to stick it to them. We're telling Saddam, you don't have to take that. And then the guys at the Defense Department who are alarmed and trying to stop it, they're too little too late to stop it. And then once he invades, though, Colin Powell, who is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff at the time, announces that we've decided as long as he doesn't move on Saudi Arabia, it'll be fine. And we've warned him, just don't you try to move on Saudi Arabia. But 3 days later, they changed their mind. Sorry, I'm getting too bogged down in the details here. I'll try to go faster. Margaret Thatcher from Britain says, no, you have to go because she's got investments in Kuwait and Kuwait has investments in British debt. And so it was British interests, really, that Thatcher accused Bush Sr. of being a wimp. She said, don't you go wobbly on me, Bush, meaning you can't be less of a man than me. And so he said, yeah, you're right. And so he said, this will not stand and we're going to war. And then they spent the rest of 1991 refusing to negotiate when they could have, because at that point they'd thrown down the gauntlet. Now they have to have a war. Now, your audience, everyone remembers Iraq War One, Desert Storm, the Gulf War, Yellow Ribbon, as this great success. Our space age technology versus their caveman status. We can fly our missiles right down their chimneys and in their windows. That was actually only about 2% of the bombs dropped, but that's what they showed us on TV, these super smart bombs. And everybody thinks it was a great success. But here's the rub. This is why I'm telling this story. At the end of Iraq War One, Bush Sr. and his men encouraged the Shiites to rise up and overthrow Saddam Hussein. Now, remember I said Saddam Hussein had invaded Iran 10 years before. But, okay, Jimmy Carter gave him the green light, but why did he want to do it? Well, he wanted to do it because Saddam Hussein was a secular Sunni sitting on a Ba'athist dictatorship ruling over a supermajority Shiite population, 60% Shiite Arabs. All the land from Baghdad to Iran and down to Kuwait is predominantly Shiite. They were mixed, but it's predominantly Shiite territory. Another 20% of the Kurds in the north. And then the Sunnis are another 20%. And they were dominant. So Hussein was afraid when this Shiite revolution took hold in Iran that the Shiite population of Iraq, they might now choose their religious sect over their nationality and their ethnicity as Iraqis and Arabs. And they might side with the Shiites in Iran and try to wage an Islamist revolution in Iraq. So that was why he started the war, so he could conscript them all and force them to go to war with Iran rather than against him.
Got it.
Okay. So now it's 10 years later. America's just invited him into Kuwait and forced him back out again. And now Bush and his men, Bush Sr. and his men, encourage the Shiites to rise up and overthrow Saddam Hussein. Mm. Have you ever seen the movie Three Kings?
No.
It's got Ice Cube and...
Okay. Yeah, that's fine. It goes on. And thank you for stopping there. I didn't have it in my notes. It goes on. But I should add this. I have not heard him explain that that run-up to where we're at today outside of reading it in his book. And his latest book, that was Scott Horton being interviewed, is called Provoked. That is his latest work. He's also the author of Fool's Errand and some other works, but this is perhaps one of the most important periods in history that will advance the complete destruction, annihilation of any Palestinian-held territory. I'm telling you, that's what, especially to the north of Israel. And that's what a lot of this is about. And we are provoking Russia, hence the name, on many fronts. Ukraine, I would add Romania in there only to the extent that we do have some pressure being put on that, that knocked out, Georgescu, or at least put him before the equivalent of a Supreme Court to question that election and potentially, unseat the, or that potentially to create that country as an antagonistic empire against Russia and, of course, Syria. Man, I don't know if any of this made sense to you, but what I'm saying is this is the culmination at this point of the modern neocon slash warmongers slash demonic globalist agenda. We are in the final throes of this. Syria is really the last country that's in the way of this swath from Western Europe, from that side of Europe all the way across through Ukraine. And we are fighting by proxy Russia, and to a lesser extent, given all of this information, China, but in different venues, different areas of operation. Folks, I don't know if that made sense, but understand how critical it is right now. So when Steve Quayle comes on and talks about, well, you know, when he has this information download and it seems not to make sense, I'm trying to provide the context of what he's talking about. And hopefully I did that. If not, folks, you can do your own research. Again, go to Hagmann PI, HagmannPI.com, and click on each link, and you can watch the entire episodes of the edits that I took. You can watch or then read all of the citations that I provided for you. But I'm telling you right now, this is such, at this moment, anything can happen at this moment. Anything can happen. Now, I would add this, and I can't remember if he mentioned this. The influx of true refugees into Western European nations. This is caused by the U.S. This is caused by Israel. This is caused by a number of countries that you would ordinarily think would be good. But this is, that's not a, it's not a bug. It's a feature. And that's an intended feature to further destabilize Western Europe. People in chat, any, do I get a grade on that? Did it somewhat clear things up, or did it become more confusing?
Flibbity gibbity nonsense.
I wouldn't put it past, seriously. You know, I'm telling you,
Eric. It's good. Keep going.
Well, I could, but I'll tell you what. I don't have enough time. Looking at the clock, I want to get into what's taking place domestically, but the immense importance of the events of today, of the last couple of weeks, really. And the fact that Biden is MIA, that should tell you something too. I'm really concerned. Are we going to see a President Trump inauguration? I mean, with everything that's taking place, or if he does, when he is inaugurated, are we going to see nothing but President Trump trying to plug the holes in the wall of events? Man, when you really look at things, it is absolutely astonishing to see these moving parts all working together. Domestically, we have BLM now, the shell of itself, really, BLM. But Antifa, but don't count them
They're
out
back.
Yet. They're back. Eric, I love you, man. They're back. Cut 3 Well, I'll tell you what. We'll go to the shortest cut first. 19 seconds after the acquittal of Daniel Penny, the head of the New York branch of Black Lives Matter, Hawk Newsom, came out and did a press conference. This is 19 seconds.
No, it's not. He's not Shaquille O'Neal.
No, he's not. He's not Shaquille O'Neal at all. How would you describe him, Eric the Tech?
Shaquille O'Neal.
Shaquille O'Neal. All right. This is cut two. I'm sorry. This is cut two. New York Black Lives Matter leader Hawk Newsom in a press conference. These are the key words to really focus on. And then we'll go to the larger picture here of what is being attempted here in the U.S. using this as a catalyst. Go ahead.
We need some black vigilantes.
That's right.
People want to jump up and choke us and kill us for being loud. How about we do the same when they attempt to oppress us?
Right.
I'm tired.
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 I'm tired. Yeah, I've got to get a BLM translation device. I'm telling you.
Take a nap, lady.
Judge Jeanine Pirro did set the record straight about Daniel Penny. And she did pretty good on this. And really, out of all of the people involved in this, the person to really, the person to point at and to say, you're responsible for anything that happens subsequent to today with respect to any kind of riots, any kind of uprisings, is Alvin Bragg. And who's really pushing Bragg, or who's behind Bragg? Obviously, he's a Soros appointee, but everything is going through the White House. Think the connection between Bragg and Matthew Colangelo. Okay. Everyone who went after President Trump is now looking for any reason, not that they need one, but looking for a legitimate reason to burn cities and to kill police and to cause chaos and disorder. Ideally, it would be in Washington, D.C., and ideally, it would be timed around the inauguration, and it still could be. But this is Alvin Bragg. This is on him. This is on Soros. This is on Biden. And I'll say this. This is on Barry Satoru, Barack Hussein Obama. I got a text from someone who served and also went on to become a law enforcement officer. Good guy. I'm telling you, of all the people involved in law enforcement, this guy would stop and help you change a tire. Okay, that's the kind of law enforcement person we need. And certainly, but the text was, you know, what they did to Daniel Penny, they intend to do to anyone who wants law and order. And the text went on longer, but I thought about this and I thought the domestic chaos that is expected, and I expect it. Remember 26 or 2017, the day of the inauguration. Remember Madonna, you know, in her pink hat and everyone in their pink hats. But Madonna's saying, I've thought an awful lot about blowing up the White House. Many threats. This is in addition to what we see overseas. President Trump is now walking into a viper's den of chaos, and they want to expand the chaos. In addition to the BLM and Antifa, You have groups, and I'm convinced of this based on everything I've seen. You've got groups of foreign nationals, not illegal aliens seeking asylum, but foreign nationals to team up with Antifa, the remnants, and BLM, the remnants, to create internal chaos. That's what we're seeing. But Judge Jeanine, talking about the Daniel Penny case and acquittal, she does do a great job here. This is a 2-minute clip, and this is cut one in the show notes.
In fact, Danny Penny was justified in using that force, even, and he used less than Jordan Neely did because he threatened imminent deadly physical force. And you were entitled to use that kind of force. Although Danny Penny didn't even know he died. He's speaking to the cops. He didn't even know he died. He thought that apparently that he was unconscious. In the end, what we have here are people demanding justice for Jordan Neely. Let me make one point. The truth is that Jordan Neely was on a list of New York City's most needy, homeless, and mentally ill people. In a city of 8 million, he's on a list of 50. He had open warrants for assaulting women on the subway. One senior woman in particular, he had just broken her orbital bone. He had 42 arrests in 7 years. Where were these people trying to help Jordan Neely? But Danny Penny did what all of us would want someone to do if we were on that subway car. And I think that America breathes a sigh of relief today. America now recognizes that we can protect other Americans and not be accused of being vigilantes, that we can be good Samaritans within the confines of the law. And if a jury in New York City can find Danny Penny not guilty, well, then I feel good about the rest of America.
Judge, quick follow-up question. Would it pass constitutional muster, and do you think it's likely for the DA to recharge Daniel Penny?
First of all, it's double jeopardy. Secondly, they shouldn't have gotten involved in the politics of saying we're going to dismiss the first count of Mantua in this indictment. Stay out of it. They said that they couldn't come to an agreement. Why all the fancy footwork between the Manhattan DA and the judge? That's not going to happen, because if they can't prove criminally negligent homicide, for sure they're not going to be able to come back with Mantua, and it is double jeopardy.
And that's one of the reasons I played that clip, because I got a lot of emails asking whether they could refile the charges. And given the fact that they dropped the highest charge or the most severe charge and attempted the criminal negligent homicide, they can't do anything. I mean, they cannot retry him on, really, they can't retry him on either charge. So the fact is, there were two holdouts. I should add this. And for those people wondering about the details, there were two holdouts. The judge on Friday really, in my view, really attempted to, well, he certainly didn't act like a normal judge. It was a political activist sending the jury back. Look, we'll take the highest count off. You guys go back and talk about the lesser charge of criminal negligent homicide. But the way he did that, the way that judge did that, to me was extremely politically charged in this. And it was, I believe, this acquittal will, there will be people out there attempting to make this a racial issue, despite the facts, despite the fact that Daniel Penny did not kill Jordan Neely. The chokehold did not kill him. It was a combination of a medical condition as well as drug use. It wasn't because of the chokehold. He was not suffocated. He wasn't strangled. But anyway, tensions now are rising. Protesters have been arrested. In fact, if you want to throw up video four, just real quick here, and take a look at what happened outside of the courtroom. And this is after that BLM that BLM news conference. Cut four.
He was hungry! He was killed for being poor!
No justice!
Shame!
No peace.
Shame on you!
No justice! No peace!
This is fucking sick! They don't give a goddamn about us! I didn't hurt nobody or kill no goddamn body! But I did more time than that man did for killing somebody!
If we don't get no justice,
then they don't get no peace.
If we don't get no justice,
then they don't get no peace.
No justice,
no peace.
You can cut that. That's fine. You get the idea, all right? These people obviously are attempting to cause a riot type situation, folks. If it's not the death of Jordan Neely, if it's not the acquittal of Daniel Penny, it's going to be something else. And meanwhile, here's the other part of everything going on domestically. You have these rogue judges being installed in the final days of the Biden regime, okay, being approved, being appointed, installed. More of what you're about to hear, about to see, is going to be taking place. You might think,
can't let that happen.
I love it. I'm telling. Give me some sound clips from the Beverly Hillbillies, okay? Some great granny clips, man. I'm telling you, there's some great ones. When she was, by the way, a good video clip is when she was fighting that jackrabbit. Oh, love that one. But in addition to causing that domestic violence, there's one other thing in the final days of the Biden regime. Pay attention to this as well, because there will be hell to pay for what is going on right now. And I leave this on a positive note, even though what you're going to hear and see from Julie Kelly is a very negative thing. But I'm telling you, justice, real justice, is coming. Take a listen and take a listen to what Julie Kelly is saying here. There were three trials today that started for January 6th. Defendants today, 4 years after the fact, nearly 4 years. But listen to this one case, an 81-year-old man. Listen to what this judge did today and expect more. But the positive is what's coming on January 20th. Of next year. Here it is. Cut three.
The one and only Julie Kelly. I think maybe his Mike Benz is to USAID. Julie Kelly is the equivalent thorn in the side of the DOJ. Though I guess with the deep state theory of the case, they what, all merged together. It's all one, well, blob. We're joined now by Julie Kelly, who has a wonderful new piece up at Real Clear Politics, talking how the January 6th persecution is continuing. Jack Smith may be out of a job, but that doesn't mean the appetite to get Trump is dissipating in any way, shape, or form. Julie, can you walk us through the latest in your piece?
Sure, Natalie. Thanks for having me on. So as I explained, despite the fact that President Trump continues to promise to pardon J6ers, many, if not all of them, including his interview over the weekend on Meet the Press with Kirsten Welker, the DOJ, led by D.C. U.S. Attorney Matthew Graves, and nearly every single D.C. judge Natalie, continues to advance January 6th cases. This includes putting people on trial before D.C. juries. Three trials were scheduled to start today. They arrested a man from Florida today for his participation in the events of January 6th. And Natalie, even worse, they continue to send people to jail. What happened last week, absolutely egregious abuse of the judicial system by Judge Royce Lambert, an 81-year-old Reagan appointee who is spending his last days, weeks on earth, not enjoying his family, but exacting the maximum punishment against Trump supporters. He sentenced a man, Natalie, convicted of four misdemeanors, sent him to federal prison for a year. And instead of allowing him to report to custody 2 or 3 months from now, which is usual practice, Judge Lambert remanded him into immediate custody, sending him to a federal prison on trespassing misdemeanors a few weeks before Christmas. Why? Because he knows if he delayed the sentencing until February or March, this defendant, because it was four misdemeanors, very likely would be pardoned by President Trump and never go to jail. So Judge Lambert didn't want to take that risk and send him immediately to federal prison. This is what Bay Sixers have been up against in what I call the legal and judicial circle of hell in that Washington, D.C. federal courthouse.
Lambert has been pushing the conspiracies of January 6th. He has been one of the most incredibly divisive judges, really, in the entire D.C. court. I believe he's a political activist, not a judge. He has assailed and called the claims of a Fedsurrection, of the federal assets being involved in this, preposterous. He's on a one-man crusade, this Lambert is, to really, if he had his way, to execute everyone involved with January 6th. That's who Royce Lambert is. The guy. And I've been in front of a couple of judges that were really past their prime, and this guy is beyond the use by date, best by date. I'm telling you, but this man, this elderly man, being remanded into custody immediately. Can it be done? Yes. Has it been done? Absolutely. Would it be in this case? Was it prudent? No. This shows, I believe, the absolute hatred of you and I, everyone in the chat, everyone listening and watching this show, their hatred of not just their country, but of every one of us. And folks, I believe in my heart of hearts that left unchecked, if this is not addressed immediately by President Trump, that not only will this continue, but this will get a lot worse. The information I'm getting, obviously the same as you're getting open source, is the fact that pretty much all of the J6 people will be pardoned. Now, it's my understanding there are going to be a couple of exceptions if a connection to extreme violence, and I'm talking about severe violence, or a connection to Antifa exists. But on the whole, I've been getting the information that, yeah, there will be a blanket pardon with a few exceptions. Folks, I just did get a message from Randy Taylor. He's home from the hospital.
1 minute.
He's supposed to be released tomorrow. They released him today. He has some equipment with him. But on the whole, he's doing okay, and he sends his messages of love to every one of you, and I will send your message back to him. But he's home, he's doing well, and he'll have a follow-up appointment in about 10 days. But things look good, and that's for Randy Taylor. So he'll be back with me, I'm sure, at some point. When he gets restless, guys,
knowing him tomorrow.
Yeah, but I'm...